Hello and welcome to Right Through Now. This is the podcast that helps you stay connected with science and technology, news and world events, stuff like that. All right, let's begin. So, it is said that Neanderthals helped create early human art, researchers say. So, an archaeologist has said that the ability to think and create objects may not have been restricted to Homo sapiens. When Neanderthals, Denisovans, and Homo sapiens met one another 50,000 years ago, these archaic and modern humans not only interbred during the thousands of years in which they overlapped, but they exchanged ideas that led to a surge in creativity, according to a leading academic. A professor of archaeological science, Mr. Tom Higham, at the University of Oxford, argues that their exchange explains a proliferation of objects in the archaeological record, such as perforated teeth and shell pendants, the use of pigments and colorants, decorated and incised bones, carved figurative arts, and cave painting. Through the early 50,000s up to around 38,000 to 40,000 years ago, we see a massive growth in these types of ornaments that we simply didn't see before. I think that's really interesting. And again, hats off to people who devote their lives studying, you know, archaeology, digging through our planet to try and find out our origin story, you know? That's just super cool. All right, let's see what else is up. Ooh, interesting. Baidu earns permission to test paid driverless taxi in Kangsau. You know, this is something that is increasingly, on the one hand, worrying me, and on the other, it's really, really inspirational because, yes, driverless cars are, you know, on the horizon. They've been very much so on the horizon since like half a decade now. But at the same time, there's increasing developments where stuff like taxis, you know, massive trucks are now becoming driverless. So in the strictest sense, it's not really 100% true, at least for the trucks, because lately there's been new technology tests going on that allow, you know, truckers to work from home. And what that is it's a massive setup where you have, I don't know, the equivalent of 8 screens right in front of you. And it's basically like a, I don't know, like a gaming chair, you know? And you have a steering wheel, you have all the controls, and you have all this view. And you can drive a truck cross-country. And this was part of a news story that I was watching just a couple of days ago. And this was about the developments of 5G and how it's going to proliferate our lives. And that is on the one hand beautiful and on the other terrifying because, you know, if you're in a low-slung sports car driving on the Autobahn and next to you is, you know, a semi which doesn't have a driver in it, that's going to be terrifying, isn't it? But on the other hand, I guess maybe it makes things more stable. So until and unless, you know, it's actually run its course, it's going to be very difficult to predict whether that is a good thing or a bad thing. So the permission to, you know, test paid driverless taxis, I think it's generally speaking, it's a step in the right direction. I think driverless cars are generally better at making decisions when it comes to, you know, split second stuff where they want to predict accidents before they happen and stuff like that. So 100%, but then that human element is gone. And I don't know if I trust an algorithm to make the decisions on whether or not to save my life. Okay, after it started testing autonomous vehicles in Kangzhou, China last summer, Baidu has now obtained the necessary permits to experiment with how it will monetize those vehicles. The city, located about 150 miles south of Beijing, granted the company's Apollo Go robo-taxi service permission to run commercialization tests with 35 cars and an additional 10 permits with which to trial fully driverless vehicles. It's going to be interesting to see how these cars interact with regular road traffic. All right, let's see. Okay, so NASA is supposed to host virtual symposiums exploring the rise of commercial space. So it's, you know, this is something that has been going on in the past decade or so. And this is, SpaceX has obviously created a kind of a mini revolution in this space. Virgin has joined as well. So from activities in low Earth orbit to NASA's Artemis program, the commercial space industry has emerged as an innovator in areas of space access, commerce, and exploration. In an effort to address the growth of commercial space over the past decades and inform the relationship between government and industry for the future, NASA will host a virtual event on Wednesday, March 17th through Friday, March 19th, with a final season, a final session on Thursday, March 25th. This is really interesting. If you're interested in space stuff, I encourage you to check it out. All right, let's see. Oh, so more electric car news. Mini will reportedly go all electric by 2030. This is just part of the trend, isn't it? I mean, every single car manufacturer is going this way, and that tells you it's happening. Right. You might soon add MINI to the ranks of car brands planning to go all electric within a decade. According to Electric Der Spiegel, sources understand MINI will go EV only by 2030 with its last new combustion engine car arriving in 2025. It would be the first BMW badge to drop gas, as the German newspaper said. One more thing that I'm interested in, I think it was Nissan that developed a really small, lightweight, maybe a two-cylinder or three-cylinder engine that made like a mad amount of power. And of course, that is for the, you know, it's for motorsport rather than for regular cars. But that little guy never got a chance to end up in road cars. That's a bit sad. I mean, think about it. If an engine is very heavy, it's usually, in all circumstances, it is above 100 kilos, especially if it's going into a car. But then to have something that weighs less and makes more power than most engines, that would have been a game changer. But I guess the game's already changing before that ever came to be a reality. All right, so BMW's iDrive 8 helps drivers using machine learning and natural language processing. Yeah, I've been making this point a couple of times, but it looks like, you know, cars are fundamentally what cars are is changing. And there's going to be more, as you know, as time passes, there's going to be more and more science and technology integrated into cars that is, you know, stuff other than to do with the driving experience, other than to do with, you know, just being on the road between A and B. It's going to be more about entertainment, fun stuff, about spending time in your car doing something else. Let's see what this specific article has to say. 2 decades after its debut in the 2001 Series 7, BMW's iDrive infotainment system is among the best on the market. It's about to get even better. Think natural language processing, gesture control, and cloud-based machine learning with the release of its latest iteration, iDrive 8, aboard the upcoming BMW iX and i4. The system's onboard AI, BMW Intelligent Personal Assistant, will be the driver's primary point of contact when interacting with the new iDrive 8. The driver will be able to give the IPA a personalized name and then queue up various in-vehicle functions and infotainment information streams using either verbal or non-verbal commands. It's basically just another infotainment system. It's just a new generation. Still very cool. Right, here's the biggest announcements from Volkswagen's battery event. Now, you know, batteries are one of the bottlenecks when it comes to electric cars. And there's a few bottlenecks, but this is one of them, and this is up there. So the more rapidly there are developments in battery technology, the more rapidly we can see, you know, electric vehicles being adopted in the real world. So Volkswagen Group unveiled a massive push to drive down the cost of producing batteries for its electric vehicles in the hopes of speeding the transition away from gas-powered cars. The automaker, which is the second largest in the world based on sales, said it would reduce the cost of producing its batteries by up to 50%. All in all, super cool. All right, let's see what else is going on. Yep, so GM-backed Cruise acquires self-driving startup Voyage. This is a really kind of hot industry right now. I mean, if you're a startup in this space, it's looking good so far. And of course, a lot depends upon how competitive your technologies are and, you know, what value you can provide to car makers. But there looks like they're eating up these smaller organizations left and right. Cruise, a self-driving subsidiary of General Motors, announced today that it's acquiring Voyage, a self-driving startup. It's the latest in a trend of consolidation in the industry. The self-driving industry is consolidating and the leaders of a $1 trillion market are fast emerging, said Voyager co-founder and CEO Oliver Cameron in a blog post. After being intimately involved with the AV industry for the last 5 years, I can say with certainty that Cruise, with its advanced self-driving technology, unique automaker partnerships, and all-electric purpose-built vehicles with no human controls, is posed to be the clear leader. End quote. Well, again, I'm on the fence when it comes to, you know, cars without controls. But, you know, you don't control a bus. I mean, the bus driver, does, you almost never interact with a bus driver. But of course, this is, you know, a completely different thing. A bus driver is very much a human being, very much in control. It's a full human being. And, you know, when cars or buses or taxis without even controls are into the market, I don't know how that's going to affect stuff, you know, your experience of driving, of being in a car. I mean, it's like I've been in trams that don't have drivers, at least in the, you know, visibly in part of the train. But it's a whole different experience, and I can't wrap my head around it just yet. I guess I have to be out there in the world a little bit more when the pandemic ends and find places where this stuff is happening so I can get to trial this stuff, you know? All right, let's move on. Okay, so here's another interesting bit of news. Climate change. Jet fuel from waste dramatically lowers emissions. A jet fuel made from food waste has the potential to reduce emissions from flying. You know, this is very common. I'm surprised how few people realize that fuel dumping is a thing. And this article is not about that, but I just generally wanted to bring it up because, you know, so many flights out of necessity have to dump fuel. It's part of their process that, you know, if you're making a long journey and you have to carry reserve fuel just as a safety precaution, and you have to dump a tremendous amount of fuel under various different circumstances. That's why I'm hoping for innovation in this sector as well. I mean, the electric car sector is kind of exploding with new innovations happening, as you've heard on this podcast, daily. But not enough stuff is happening in the aerospace. But of course, right now is probably a bad time. All right. A new approach to making jet fuel from food waste has the potential to massively reduce carbon emissions from flying, scientists say. Currently, most of the food scraps that are used for energy around the world are converted into methane gas. But researchers in the US have found a way of turning this waste into a type of paraffin that works in jet engines. The authors of the new study say the fuel cuts greenhouse gas emissions by 165% compared to fossil energy. This figure comes from the reduction in carbon emitted from airplanes, plus the emissions that are avoided when food waste is diverted from landfill. I think that is a really interesting bit of news. To be honest, I'm just, you know, waiting for the time where air travel becomes normal again. But I guess, you know, there are positives from air traffic being reduced to zero currently. All right, well, that's it for today's episode. And see you next time. Take it easy. Ciao.